Today we are returning to our study in the book of Genesis after our two-week break for the Passover holiday. And we are down in Genesis chapter 29. Actually, we're about middle, maybe. I'm sorry, Genesis chapter 30. Genesis chapter 30. We are about halfway or so, I guess a little bit more than halfway down. Well, maybe about halfway. Genesis chapter 30. Before this, we have been looking at the account of Jacob. You remember Jacob deceived his father and royally ticked off his brother. And so Jacob had to flee from the land of Canaan all the way to Haran, where his family was residing, to stay there, quote, a few days, as his mother said, before his brother's anger should subside. And now it has been at least 14 years to the point where we're going to be talking about today. And actually, by the time we're done, it'll be 20 years total that he spends in the land of Haran. That was not just like around the block from Canaan. I did look up how far it was. It was over 300-mile journey for him. So walking or riding camels, that was not a trivial journey in their day. I mean, even in our day, 350 miles is not something that you would undertake. You wouldn't commute 350 miles to work, I wouldn't think, unless you owned an airport. And in their day, it was especially bad. It was a journey of a week or two in order to get where they were going, so it was not a trivial journey. So Jacob went to this land and decided he liked his cousin, Rachel. Rachel had a sister, Leah. Laban was his uncle. Laban decided that he was going to give to him Leah instead of Rachel. So Jacob wound up serving for another 7 years for Rachel. And now finally he had both Rachel and Leah as wives. And then the beginning part of chapter 30 speaks about all the things that are going on in their household, the conflicts and whatnot that will play itself out later on. But for right now, you know, the conflicts of who belongs to which woman worked itself out in a few chapters from now. But Jacob has a problem. His problem is that he's still working for his uncle Laban. He's got quite a family. He's got two wives, a couple concubines, a bunch of kids, you know, 12 sons that we know of, one daughter we know of, probably more daughters. Actually, he's got 11 sons at this point. He doesn't have the 12th yet. He doesn't have Benjamin. And so now he's got a problem. He certainly doesn't have much of a future with Uncle Laban. Uncle Laban has given him nothing except tsuris, trouble, anxiety over the course of his employment. And so now he's got a family. Quite a family. Quite a family. So now in Genesis chapter 30, verse 25. Now it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I might go to my own place and to my own country." 20 years, he still does not consider Haran to be home. He still considers Canaan to be home. Which is sort of interesting. I think that he had in mind the promise of God to his father and to him, the things that he had seen that God had promised him at Bethel, that even in the midst of all this distraction that he'd had for the last 14 to 20 years, that at this point he still regarded the promises of God. He still regarded Canaan as home. Verse 26, "Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me depart, for you yourself know my service which I have rendered you." But Laban said to him, "If now it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account. Continue, name me your wages, and I will give it." But he said to him, "You yourself know how I have served you, and how your cattle have fared with me. For you had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude. And the Lord has blessed you wherever I turned. But now, when shall I provide for my own household also?" In other words, Jacob wanted something for his own family. And you could tell that the flock had much increased, because when Jacob first came into the land of Haran, the flock, such as it was entrusted just to Rachel. You wouldn't entrust a large, thriving flock to your daughter. I mean, that was just their culture. They wouldn't have done that. So you probably had just a very few sheep that was entrusted to her. Now, a big flock. Verse 31, so he said, "What shall I give you?" And Jacob said, "You shall not give me anything. If you will do this one thing for me, I will again pasture and keep your flock. Let me pass through your entire flock today, removing from there every speckled and spotted sheep, and every black one among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and such shall be my wages. So my honesty will answer for me later when you come concerning my wages. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and black among the lambs, if found with me, will be considered stolen." Laban said, "Good, let it be according to your word." So he removed on that day the striped and spotted male goats and all the speckled and spotted female goats, everyone with white in it, and all the black ones among the sheep, and gave them into the care of his sons. And he put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob, and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. It's uncertain exactly what was going on here. I don't quite understand all the things that are going on here, but basically, the bottom line is that speckled sheep were considered to be rare among flocks. So that's why Laban agreed so quickly. He's like, "Oh, that's not a great deal." So that, especially if you had flocks of solid-colored sheep, speckled sheep were very rare. I read up a little bit about sheep until my eyes started to blur and cross a little bit, trying to figure out all the things that were going on. But apparently the speckled and spotted sheep were sheep that had, in some sense, gone a little wild. And really what they bred for was they bred for solid-colored sheep. And so the speckled sheep didn't really show up all that often. So Laban was probably thinking, a great deal. And in fact, Laban even took all the spotted sheep out of the flock. That's where people disagree on why. But basically, if you would have a speckled sheep mate with a solid-colored sheep, then some of the offspring would be speckled. Laban didn't want to have that happen. So most likely he had a very small proportion of the flock that was already speckled, and he said, "We're taking those out." And assuming that Jacob would only have what was left in that speckled flock. Verse 37, then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees and peeled white stripes in them, exposing the white which was in the rods. He set the rods which he had peeled in front of the flocks in the gutters, even in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, and they mated when they came to drink. So the flocks mated by the rods, and the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the striped, and all the black in the flock of Laban, and he put his own herds apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. Moreover, whenever the stronger of the flock were mating, Jacob would place the rods in the sight of the flock in the gutters, so that they may mate by the rods. But when the flock was feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. So the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. Should this have worked? No. No. Naturally speaking, this should not have worked. Right, I want to weigh that at rest right now. That sheep do not choose their color based on what they see when they're mating. I mean, as far as people know, they don't. As far as people know, that this is all done, you know, genetically. It's passed down what color the sheep was going to be. So, was it really Jacob's actions that were causing this? Well, let's find out. We're going to go a bit into chapter 31. In chapter 31, starting verse 1, now Jacob heard the words of Laban's son, saying, "Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father, he has made all this wealth." They were just swimming in speckled lambs. Right? From just a little tiny bit, now all of a sudden there are speckled lambs everywhere. And where there were speckled lambs, you had these burly lambs, the speckled and spotted lambs, and you had these wimpy lambs, which were the solid color. And Laban's sons are scratching their head and saying, what just happened here? What happened to our flock? It's all going to Jacob. Dad, you're giving all our good lambs to Jacob. And Laban was like, oh, I can't do that. Verse 2, Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. Because now he wasn't talking about increasing Laban's prosperity. He was talking about increasing Jacob's prosperity. And that was not something that Laban was all about. Verse 3. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. So God said, okay, time to go. Time to go. It's time. Everybody saddle up. Go home. Verse 4. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to his flock in the field, and said to them, I see that your father's attitude, that it is not friendly toward me as formerly, but the God of my father has been with me. So God directed him to move out. Verse 6. You know that I have served your father with all my strength. I have to stop there and kind of ponder that for a minute, because that's not certainly the way we do things nowadays. I mean, we all have to face that, right? Those of us who work for other people, we're in the corporate or business world, or even if we're in a small shop or small store or whatever, that generally speaking, our natural inclination is that when we have a good boss, we work hard. When we have a weird, psychotic, twisted, or incompetent boss, we tend to work not that hard. But Jacob wasn't like that. Jacob served Laban with all his strength, even though at every turn of the road, Laban was cheating and scheming and conniving in order to do ill to Jacob. But yet Jacob served him with all his strength. Laban certainly wasn't going to reward Jacob for that. That's not how Laban thought. Laban thought about everything. What's in it for me? But Jacob wasn't of that same character. Verse 7, yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. But God was still looking out for Jacob. Even though Laban did his worst, he was able to take away Jacob's property, or to cheat Jacob of his property or of his work, but not really to harm him. Verse 8, if he spoke thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, the striped shall be your wages, then the flock brought forth striped. Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. See, it wasn't Jacob with his cleverness, with the striped poles. Striped poles, I guess it made Jacob feel a little better, but as far as what actually was going on, it wasn't the striped poles that did anything. It was God that did it. And what's implied there is if Laban had said, take the solids, and all the sheep would have been solid after that. That was just up to God. Verse 10, and it came about at the time when the flock were mating that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and mottled. And the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob, and I said, here I am. He said, lift up your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. So God told him, go. He said, I'm looking out for you. I kept my part of the bargain. Now you need to go back to the land of Canaan. Verse 14, Rachel and Leah said to him, do we still have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? For he has sold us and has also entirely consumed our purchase price. Surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. And Jacob arose and put his children and his wives upon camels and drove away all his livestock and all his property which he had gathered, his acquired livestock which he had gathered in Paddan Aram, to go to the land of Canaan to his father Isaac. So he got together all his stuff, got together his wives, and he left in haste and in secret in order to go back home to where he was going. When he arrived in Haran, he had just the shirt on his back and the staff in his hand. And now he's going back with this mighty company, with all this flock and wives and children and all the rest. So certainly he's been acknowledging even then that it was God who brought forth this increase and not his own intelligence or cleverness as a herdsman in order to bring forth these sheep. God takes care of his own people in sometimes surprising ways. I guess that would be the walk away from this, the so what, the how does this matter, is that here we have God who made promises to Jacob. Now, the first thing we have to notice is that God's promises are not always happening at the same speed that we would conceive of them happening, because God had promised to Jacob way back in a few chapters that he was going to be the inheritance, and in him all the inheritance of the promise of Abraham. And here it was 20 years later, 20 years of herding sheep in the wilderness and dealing with Laban. I mean, when I deal with, I've in my career dealt with bosses who have been slimy and underhanded several times, and I can't wait to get out of there. I can't conceive of serving that person for 20 years. But Jacob did. He served that person for 20 years. But God still, after those 20 years, first of all, had changed Jacob. Even in this one section that we just read today, you can listen to Jacob talk about what God had done for him, and there's no Jacob in there. Jacob was saying, God did this for me. And compare that to Jacob's attitude when he was leaving home. Jacob was all about what Jacob did. I mean, Jacob was a conniver and a schemer, and he just had all these plans and angles, we'd say, and he was just all set and ready to do stuff, and that wound him for 20 years herding sheep. And now he's finally realized that it's all because of God. God either does or he doesn't. And so he is now obeying the hand of God, obeying the voice of God, rather, and that is where the blessing comes. When you think about it, this was not an easy thing that he was about to do. You know, all these flocks and wives and children, all the rest of it. If it's 20 years that he served, well, some of the kids are probably getting to be relatively old. And you don't have the ages of the kids when they left. But some of them, like Joseph, was not all that old when they left. So trying to keep that troop together and get them across 300-mile journey back home is not a trivial matter. He knew that God had told him to do this. He knew that things were not going to go well with Laban, and he also knew that two things, that he was in danger at the beginning of the trip and he was in danger at the end of the trip. He was in danger at the beginning of the trip from Laban, at the end of the trip from Esau. But he took the trip anyway. He decided to obey God. And God was still able to prosper Jacob in the midst of this. Now, I'm not saying that that every believer is going to be healthy, wealthy, and wise. You have to kind of react to the teaching today that says that every believer is going to be rich. All I do is trust God. I can't abide by that teaching. That certainly wasn't true in the life of the disciples. That certainly wasn't true in the life of many people who followed God in the Old Covenant. I mean, it's true in the lives of the patriarchs because God was making a point. When you look at things like the prophet Jeremiah, you look at things like the fate of the apostles, even Yeshua himself was not a rich man, so you have to look at that and say that. But yet there is a sense in which an individual believer will do better by serving God than he would by not serving God. What I mean by that is that people who do things in the scheming, underhanded ways that are not God's plan usually wind up like Laban, waking up in the middle of the night and finding that things are missing, that the prosperity has left in one way or another. And those who do things God's way find out that God provides for their needs. As Proverbs said, that the author of Proverbs said that he has never seen a righteous man begging bread. Not that people can't be poor, but the idea is that God still provides basic needs. It's hard for us in America to understand because we are so incredibly rich, so incredibly unimaginably rich. If we would go into a time capsule and bring somebody from Jacob's time forward and see the kinds of comfort that we live in and the kinds of the abundance of food and the abundance of leisure and all the rest of it, they would be astounded that anybody could have that kind of prosperity. So we're not talking about that. We're talking about God taking care of the people who trust in Him and providing what the people who trust in Him need in order to get by and perform God's program. And that's something that God did to Jacob in ways that Jacob couldn't imagine when he set out on the journey to Haran. That God worked this out, the speckled versus spotted, that I don't know why, whether Jacob had this dream from God before he made the deal or just after he made the deal. But somehow this worked out, that Jacob was able to cut a deal that was fair, that Laban agreed to, but yet God turned it around and turned it back on Laban in order to accomplish God's own plan. I'm reminded of, there is a verse in Proverbs, that is in Proverbs chapter 13, down in verse 22. I usually don't like to just take a single verse out of context, but Proverbs generally doesn't have context. Proverbs is Proverbs. So in Proverbs 13, verse 22, it says, "A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous." I look back at the life of Jacob and Laban, and that's certainly true. That the wealth of the sinner, namely Laban, is stored up for the righteous, namely Jacob. That it was taken away from the one who was the schemer, and the one who is trying all these different angles, and someone who is trying to benefit himself. And it was given away to Jacob, who was simply working hard. He was working hard and doing what God had wanted him to do. And God blessed him by it.
What verse is it?
That was in Proverbs chapter 13, verse 22. Another one, and that's in Psalm 127, verse 2. Psalm 127, verse 2. "It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors, for He gives to His beloved even in his sleep." I enjoy that verse. That doesn't mean you go to work and sleep all afternoon. Like I said, Jacob worked hard for Laban, but yet he didn't work hard for the purpose of going after money or possessions. That's kind of the difference. The New Covenant says to do your work heartily as unto the Lord, but there's a difference between doing your work heartily as unto the Lord and working very hard so that you can become rich. Working very hard so that you might become rich is generally a bad idea. Doing your work heartily as unto the Lord, let the Lord work out all the details as far as whether He's going to provide, how to provide for you. But don't you go out deciding that you're going to put aside your service to God for a while in order to chase after money. Because once you step down that road, getting back on the right road is very difficult. Just like any other forms of idolatry. You go after money or sensuality or anything. It's very, very difficult to find your way back. It's possible. In God, all things are possible. But it's difficult. God will bring you back, but it might be painful to bring you back. So those are really the two themes that I see in this. The theme number one is that God's timing is not our timing. 20 years. 20 years. That's painful for us to think about because waiting 20 minutes is tough for us. I mean, this little laptop that I use for services, I just had to upgrade it because even trying to use it was like taking, you know, 10 or 15 seconds to do things. Like, oh, 10 or 15 seconds. Oh, and it's like, okay, this thing is doing in 10 or 15 seconds what you'd have to, would take you hours by hand, and that was annoying me. So the idea of spending 20 years in us is not something that we take very easily, but when you're building character in people does not happen right away. And that was the first theme, I think, in here, is that you're starting to see the glimmings of the character of the man that Jacob had become. But that took a while. That took a long time. We want instant character. We want to take our character pills and want to become instantly godly. But it takes a long time. How do you learn patience? Well, by exercising it. How do you learn steadfastness? Well, by practicing it. How do you learn strength? Well, being in places where you need to be strong. And so Jacob had been learning that. So that's the first theme I see in this passage. And he did not go back home until God told him to. And God told him to. It's time to move on. So the time of testing and character development, it's like being in school that you don't get out until school's over. Jacob didn't get out until school was over. School is over, Jacob learned what he needed to do and he went home. That's the first theme I see here, is that the length of time that God took to develop his character. And the second theme I see here is what we just looked at in Psalms and Proverbs. It's the idea that God works behind the scenes, that all Jacob had to worry about was being faithful to God and faithful to Laban and not worry about getting rich. If God wants you rich, he'll make you rich. If God wants you poor, you'll be poor. I mean, you'll still have a fruitful ministry and it will be a great joy to you whether you have little or you have much. That does not make you happy. But still, God will accomplish his plan for your life in his own way, in his own time, as he did with Jacob. Here Jacob was trying to get the birthright from his brother and trying to get the blessing from his brother, which included prosperity. And from his father, he got nothing. He had nothing. He walked out with his staff and his shirt. But here he winds up in this other place. He serves 20 years, and he winds up with all these blessings. Well, because the second time, it wasn't from his own scheming. It was from the hand of God. God wanted to bless the family of Abraham. God wanted to establish the descendants of Abraham. God wanted to establish the land, the people of Israel, the descendants of Jacob. So God worked out his own plan. All of Jacob's scheming, he could have just saved himself. Like I said in the books of Psalms, it's vain for you to rise up early and retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors, for he gives to his beloved even his sleep. That's something to remember, because all around us we have people for whom money is their God. If you work in the corporate world, you have that. I work in the corporate world and I have to deal with that. Money, prestige, power. I had to sit on my hands this week. I almost volunteered for something I probably didn't want to volunteer for, in terms of, you know, taking on more responsibility. I had to stop and think, well, why do you want to do this? I don't know. It's just what people do. You know, no. Sit on your hands. Go home, take a nap. You'll feel better. Because you're filled all around with people who have thrown themselves into this whole idea, you know, like Laban, that anything goes, that any sort of dishonesty goes, any sort of scheming goes in order to make a fortune. And the fortune went to Jacob, who was just simply working hard and doing what God wanted him to do. And that was true in Jacob's day, and it's true in our day too. So the two great themes: God takes his time, God develops character. The second great theme here is that God, as Yeshua said, that you worry about the kingdom of heaven, and God worry about providing for you. And then everything will work out just fine. It will work out just fine. Let's pray. Dearest God and Father, I thank you so very much for the ways in which you have provided for us. I thank you for the overwhelming prosperity that you've given to us, and ask that you might open up our eyes, that this overwhelming prosperity might not ruin us, but that you might work your great work of character building in us, that we might not be the selfish schemers that we see all around us, but our hearts and our minds might be different, that we might be wholly devoted to you and to your kingdom, that we might see with your eyes the perspective of what is important in our lives and what isn't, so that everything we do and say might be to the glory of our Messiah, Yeshua. Amen.